I want to make sure I get a Boardwell course on my program.
Yeah, me too. Hey, do you suppose we'll be teaching property law?
All right. Now, vacation's over. I know that a great many of you have been as out of touch with schoolwork as I've been for the past few years, but just because we wasted those years, let's make sure that we don't waste any of the years that follow. Let's get things straight between us right now so we can start working and thinking as lawyers without misunderstandings and delay. First, I'm going to tell you that this is not a course in law. It's not a course where students will learn the laws of the state and the nation. I don't think a course is needed for such a job, since the laws are available in very handsomely bound books at the library, and anyone interested might easily memorize them without the help of any members of the faculty. This will rather be a course for lawyers. Did you want to say something, Mr. Easton?
I was just a little confused, sir. I don't understand how we can learn to be lawyers without learning the laws. Well, how can we know what's within the law if we don't know what the law is?
Well, maybe I ought to make myself a bit more clear, Mr. Easton. You see, what I meant to say was that lawyers are not men who have merely learned the laws that have been recorded in books. They are not men who have read the various cases that have come before our courts and memorized them. A man must think as a lawyer if he is to be one. The cases of the past that we study do not give us legal rules that hold indefinitely into the future. They are rather guideposts to the future. We study the cases so that we may recognize the guideposts and be led by them to our own conclusions and our own ideas. Now, does that answer your question, Mr. Easton?
I think so, sir.
Well, just to make sure, why don't you tell me what you think the most important phase in the study of a case should be if we are to think as lawyers?
I don't think I know what you mean, sir.
In the studying of a court case, say a Supreme Court case, should we emphasize the majority opinion of the court, or the dissenting opinion, or the exact facts of the case?
Well, sir, if what we're trying to do is learn to think as lawyers, I suppose what we should do is take both the majority opinion and the dissenting opinion and look into the background of them to find out the reasons for the opinion.
Mm-hmm. And what about the facts, the exact facts of the case?
I don't think that those are as important, sir, because it's almost impossible to find two cases in which all the facts are identical. We'd find ourselves at quite a loss out in practice if we try to fit all the cases that came before us into the scheme of one of the cases we've studied. What we can apply is the thinking behind the case rather than the case itself. That is your legal philosophy, isn't it, sir?
Yes, it's mine, and it's also that of the entire law school. So, to get the most out of college, make it yours and carry it with you into every course you take. Remember, you'll never be asked to give a recitation of Iowa's Code of Laws. You're going to be lawyers, and you're going to be good ones. Today we're going to discuss the rules against perpetuity, and I mean discuss. As you probably know by this time, you are the instructors in this class. You are going to think out the reasons for the case decisions, and you're going to remember them. Now, Mr. Grover, would you please explain your ideas of this rule against perpetuity?
Well, I believe that the rule against perpetuity is a rule that involves remoteness in the vesting of future estates.
And what about the applications?
The applications?
Yes, most rules in law do have applications, you know.
I'm afraid I don't know, sir.
Well, is there anyone in the class who can give the application? Mr. Gordon.
I believe the application of this rule precluded the creation of future estates which vest later than a life in being and 21 years.
Now, that was a very nice recitation, Mr. Gordon, but what does it mean to you?
Well, it means that an estate is limited so that it won't take effect or vest within a certain period set by law. For instance, in the case of Cornell versus Jameson, when the court had to decide...
Hey, Dan. Professor Boardwell come in yet?
Not yet. Hey, you're all out of breath. You been running or something?
I was out canoeing and didn't notice the time. I also didn't get the assignment right. Could you give me a short synopsis of the case we had today?
Oh, I wish I could help you, but...
But what? No, don't say it.
Right, I didn't read it myself.
Hey, say, Harry, did you read the case for today?
I was called on yesterday, and I've got a lot of work to do for my other courses. You don't think he'd call on me again, do you?
I don't know. Let's bow our heads. Heaven, if you don't want to fuss, don't let Bordy call on us.
Amen.
I'm sorry I'm a little late, but we'll get down to work right away and start discussion on the case of King versus Dunham. Mr. Easton, would you start the proceedings?
I'm afraid I'm not prepared today, sir. I didn't have time.
Mm-hmm, I see. Now, Mr. Grover, would you tell us your impressions of King versus Dunham?
I don't have the case prepared, sir. I thought we were going to start with an earlier case on today's assignment, sir.
I believe I made the assignment quite clear, Mr. Grover. Try one more. Mr. Gordon.
I haven't the case ready, Professor Borden.
Well, the class has certainly proved itself alert and eager to learn today. I don't know if any of you believe that you can become lawyers through some secret processes that don't involve work and studying. However, if you have found any simple way toward a knowledge of law, I would be delighted to rearrange the curriculum to suit it. Until that time, however, I believe that I am entitled to expect all of you to prepare each lesson that I have assigned. Law presents many tough problems that can only be overcome by determination and diligent study. The members of the faculty of the School of Law want to produce good lawyers or no lawyers, and this class is anything but good today. Any discussion of the difficult problems involved in the case of King versus Dunham would be useless with a class that is so definitely unprepared. I'll spend no more of my time with you today. Your assignment for tomorrow is doubled. This class is dismissed.
Oh, man.
I don't want to go through a class period like that again.
I thought it was going to have the whole lot of us expelled or something.
Well, here's one guy who's going to be prepared from now on. He felt like crawling under the seat when he called on me.
I guess he made his point, and I suppose he's right.
Any of you guys going up to the library to start working?
Well, I am right now.
Ah, Mr. Easton.
I'm sorry to bother you, sir, but there's something pretty important I'd like to talk to you about.
Well, certainly. Won't you sit down?
Thank you, sir.
Now, what is it?
It's about the final exams for graduation.
Yes?
I won't be able to take them, sir. I have to go home.
You realize what that means, don't you, Mr. Easton? Exams are given only once a semester, and all students must take them at that time. Missing them would mean you'd have to forfeit credit for your courses.
I understand, sir.
You won't be able to graduate. Is your going home that important?
I'm afraid it is, sir. You see, my mother is very ill, and the doctors don't know whether she'll live. They're going to perform an operation tomorrow, and I must be there. She's asked that I come, and, well, there's nothing I can do.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear about your mother's illness, Mr. Easton. I wish there were some way to waive the no-makeup rule. You've been doing good work in class. It would be a shame to deny you the right to graduate because of this emergency. Where do you live?
In Ottumwa, sir.
Ottumwa. Do you know Attorney Cruz there?
Yes, he's a very good friend of the family.
Well, I'll see if I can't get permission to send him a copy of the exam so that he can administer the questions to you in his office at the same time that the other students are taking the exam here.
Oh, that would be fine, sir.
He'll be able to mail them back to me after you've taken them.
Thank you very much.
You're entirely welcome, Mr. Easton. I only hope that your mother will soon be well so that you can be with us for the graduation exercises.
I surely hope I'll be back then, sir, and thank you very much again.
And it gives me a great honor to present to you, who will be leaving Iowa's College of Law to go out into the world of law, the man who has been such an integral part of our faculty, as well as a distinguished author and scholar, Professor Percy Boardwell.
Thank you, Dean McGovney, and thank you, fellow students of law. Please do not think that once you have the diplomas in your hands, you can cease being students of law, for you cannot. The law is never static. The College of Law is never static, and you must never become static. As our vision of the world expands, so must our vision of law expand. For if law does not keep up with the world, we shall find ourselves in the throes of tyranny, oppression, and chaos. It is our earnest hope that our law school here at Iowa has helped prepare you for the job of keeping up with the world as it moves ahead. That is why we have tried to teach you through asking questions rather than telling answers. We hope that through your own thinking processes, you have become lawyers with the ability to think as lawyers. Law is acquired. It is not learned. It must become a part of a man's mental attitude if he is to be a good lawyer. And we hope that all of you will be good lawyers and strong ones. You can become strong as you go beyond the routine, as you try to find your own path through uncharted fields, or through fields which have been chartered badly. Not long ago, a prospective lawyer in his bar examination was asked to recite on the hunting laws of his state and the court's decision regarding them. Well, this young man did not like the court's decision. He told the bar examiner so. He gave his reasons for not liking it, backed those reasons up with sound legal argument. The young man had not given the examiners the answers they had requested, but he had given them others, which to their way of thinking were just as satisfactory, maybe even more so. The young man passed his bar examination and later carried on with his ideas and had the hunting laws changed. So you see, law is a dynamic, ever-changing thing, and you, its disciples, must be just as dynamic. But in the progress of the law, there must always be a balance between the needs of certainty and stability and the demand for change. We must always look forward if change is desirable, yet we must never forget the law must be first and foremost the instrumentality of an ordered society. The law is in your hands. Take good care of it and keep it alive.
He's a great guy, isn't he?
Think we could get him to do Casey at the bat?
Too solemn an occasion. Maybe he'll do it at one of the alumni banquets sometime.
Maybe about it. It ought to become traditional. Professor Boardwell and Casey at the bat.
Oh, somewhere in this land of ours, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere. Somewhere hearts are light. Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
You have listened to the 8th in a series of centennial broadcasts which have been presented by the State University of Iowa. Today's script, which has dealt with the College of Law, was written by Carolyn Ladd, Herb Kanzel, and Sam Becker. Those taking part were Bob Ray, John Highlander, Pat Pope, Herb Kanzel, and Sam Becker. Clay Harshbarger directed. The State University of Iowa invites you to listen again next week at this same time when the last in this series of programs will be presented.
The 50,000-watt voice of the Middle West, WHO Des Moines.